from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Now, it's game time. Gabe Kuhn.
Gabe Kuhn was one of the great little trivial nuggets in all of football bios. His grandfather was the inventor of the Easy Bake Oven.
Like a boss, the best lineman on the radio. Well, the only lineman on the radio. It's game time.
Game time. We're ready.
The Gabe Kuhn Show. 92.9 FM. ESPN.
Happy Tuesday out there. Happy Tuesday. July 23rd, 2024 is the date, and it is time. Welcome in to the Gabe Kuhn Show. I'm your host, former Memphis Tiger offensive lineman Gabe Kuhn on X at G_Kuhn71. I'm alongside, as always, the executive producer of the show. That would be Connor Dunning on X at CDunning929. Connor, how's it hanging?
What's up, man?
Nothing much. I'm hanging in there. Even though we're not going to be able to plan that parade route, I thought there was a lot of takeaways from Summer League, all positive, even though Zach Edey was hurt. I think most everything was positive about the Summer League experience.
Summer League, by the Memphis Grizzlies.
I'm going to give you some takeaways here in a moment after we talk about the game. But I thought phenomenally played by this team. By this team altogether. So we'll get to that. We have AAC Media Days today. Everybody showed up yesterday. And we have what? AAC, Big Ten, ACC. And we'll probably get to Jim Phillips at some point today. He had an opening statement about Florida State and Clemson. He is not he's protecting himself, to say the least. But we also have Conference USA going along right now, so it's like Media Day Central this entire week. But we'll get to AAC because that has to do with your Memphis Tigers. We know about the Liberty Bowl and Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium and the construction and everything going on right there. And by the way, I think a little bit, we'll talk with Christian Fowler a little bit later. Around 6 o'clock, but I think there's a little bit of melodrama going on with some factions of the fan base when it comes to the remaking, reimagining of the Liberty Bowl. I think most people are looking forward to the future and what's going to happen, and they're going to create new memories. But there's some people that are acting like the Liberty Bowl is like gone, like it's no longer going to be there. They're basically going to take down the home side, put it up the exact same, except add different things. Good things, positive things. Thought it was strange to see some of the reaction. Oh, like basically people saying their memories. I have so many memories with the stadium. Well, they don't go away just because they're reimagining and renovating the damn thing. But that is neither here nor there. We'll talk about that as the show goes along. But AAC Media Days, we did have the poll published today. The poll for AAC football. How many first place votes do you think the Tigers got out of 30?
28.
23. So close. They're at the top of that list, and most everybody thinks they will handle themselves in the AAC, but I will let you know who to be worried about in this conference, because it goes UTSA second, Tulane third, South Florida fourth. I think that's a little bit out of order. I'll tell you why at the bottom half of this hour. We have some NFL news. We'll talk about Jordan Love in the Blitz. He is sitting out until he gets a new deal. Matt Stafford got a pay bump. Amari Cooper got a pay bump. We have more Jets drama. This time, not Aaron Rodgers. Not Aaron Rodgers this time. But the other point of emphasis, they tried to replace Bryce Huff, as Bryce Huff is gone, and he's an Eagle now. But who they got in return and also, you know, traded for was Hassan Reddick. He wants a deal done, and he's not going to play until a deal gets done. Traded for him this offseason. They have not paid him yet. He denied their first contract offer, and he is looking for another offer before he actually suits up for the Jets, which is not good for them, to say the least. As far as guests are concerned, we'll have Jeff Calkins at 5 o'clock from the Jeff Calkins Show in the Daily Memphian. He's a columnist there. He was on hand yesterday at the groundbreaking. I guess that's what we would call it, the groundbreaking, even though they're tearing down the stadium. But we'll sort of see what the scene was like there yesterday at Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium. Then 6 o'clock, Christian Fowler will join from Bluff City Media on the On the Bluff podcast with me every single Tuesday at noon. It releases on Apple, Spotify, full-length video version on YouTube. We'll talk about this Tiger football team heading into this year, probably get to a little NFL news as well. But the Grizzlies Summer League Championship, they lost. Got to OT, Elam ending, it just wasn't for them. They lost to the Jazz in the Elam ending in the first game in Summer League. They lose to the Heat with the Elam ending in the last game of Summer League. But 120-118 in OT, I thought that they played valiantly. They gave a good effort. I'm about sick of the Heat and just finding guys. Kelo Ware was very good, 21-10. He ended his Summer League run on 4 straight double-doubles. He looks like a guy who can really contribute this year. Pel Larson, come on. 16 points yesterday? 16 points. Alondis Williams. Who the hell is that guy? No one knows who he is. Undrafted guy. And then somehow he has the biggest poster of the entire Summer League. You saw that.
Of course.
It was like last week sometime.
Yeah.
Ridiculous poster. And he had 21 points on 4-for-9 shooting. Josh Christopher, who got castigated, thrown aside by the Rockets. He's at 24 points, 6-for-10 from 3. He wins the Summer League Final MVP.
Grizzlies, too.
And then Cole Swider, who's been kicking around in the G League for years, 5-for-8 from 3, 19 points. They just, guys get there, and they just start to play over their head. I'm tired of the Heat and the Heat culture and what they do to find guys. But on the Grizzlies side, I thought the Grizzlies had a good culture this Summer League. I thought in that game, the Isaiah Miller steal in Showtime was phenomenal. That was very, very fun. But when it comes to takeaways, I think there's a lot of positive. I don't have a lot of negative. I don't think there really is any negative from this Summer League performance. Once they got to Vegas, they were 5-1, and they only lost by 2 in the championship game. And most of the guys you wanted to see play well, played well. So I'll start with G.G. Jackson. I trust him now. This is my first takeaway. I trust him in this rotation, and his upside continues to be terrifying. He finished Summer League 22 points per game, 45% from the field, 38% from 3, 8.5 rebounds per game, and then 2.2 assists per game. The Grizzlies have needed some secondary offensive creation that's not Ja and a big wing, and he checks those boxes, both of those boxes. And they have more options, in my opinion, because I think one of the biggest issues that they had, even in those 50-win seasons, when they were second in the West, one of the biggest issues they had is once you got into the playoffs and you were forced to play more half-court offense, you didn't have enough shot creation. I think this year, as opposed to years past, they have more shot creation than they've ever had, really, since being in Memphis. You have Ja, you have Desmond Bane, who has grown into his own as a playmaker and a shot creator. Jaren Jackson Jr., who was one of the best ISO scorers in the league last year. I know they won 27 games, but he was really good, and I think they'll be able to take advantage of that coming up into next year. G.G. Jackson, he started to show some ability at all three levels in Summer League and down the stretch of the season last year. And then on a smaller scale, I think Marcus Smart is another guy who can create a little bit as far as his getting his own shot. But on top of that, for G.G. Jackson, on top of playmaking for himself and finding his own shot, we wanted to see him get other guys involved. And I thought we saw that in the last 3 games of Summer League. He took it upon himself to finally get involved in the playmaking department. And the last 3 games, that effort, I think he had 6 assists, 4 assists, and then 2 assists in that final game. And I don't know if you saw the Euro step dump off to Trey Jemison that led to a dunk. That was awesome. That was a great development, and I thought he developed as Summer League went along and played a different role those last three games, even while scoring crazy amounts of points. I mean, last night, 28 points, 11 for 16 from the field, 3 for 4 from 3, 9 rebounds, 2 assists. He was all over the place. Second takeaway, Scottie Pippen Jr. is headed for this active roster at some point. I don't know when. I know people are advocating for him right now to try to go make that happen, but I think they have to make some roster crunch moves, and they're going to have to decide when they want to take him off a two-way, and they're in no rush to do that. He gets 50 games next year, and I'd imagine they'd be pretty close to that limit. I think they will probably play him as much as they can. But he had 20.9 points per game, 4.1 rebounds per game, 7.8 assists, 3.2 steals. And what's nice about him going into the future, I think he sort of brings the best of both worlds when it comes to maybe a little less on the defensive end than the guy I'm going to bring up. But Tyus Jones, Marcus Smart, like he sort of brings it together. I'm not saying he's as good as both of those players, but he is really good with his assist-to-turnover ratio. He knows how to get his players involved. He can score at all three levels. And then defensively, he gets after people. He's an absolute pest. And I don't know if you know this stat, but he was the third player ever in Summer League to record a triple-double. Third player ever to record a triple-double in Summer League. And he's 23 years old. So I think going into next year, that's the most likely time that they will convert this contract. But if they get some issues early in the season, if they have some injuries, if they waive a guy, if they make a trade and they free up a roster spot, I'd imagine he is bound for this active roster. I have no other reason to doubt that at this point. Third takeaway, Jake LaRavia, NBA ready. I gotta be honest. And I'm not saying he's NBA ready in the fact that he's going to be a mainstay in the rotation. But 32 points last night, guys. 32 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 for 8 from 3. He's playing with confidence on both ends of the floor. Like, this guy as a 11th or 12th player, he's shown more flashes to me than Zaire Williams did in the past 3 years. And he's done this at the back half of last season, like the last 9 games of last season and into Summer League. He looks like a guy who's not outmatched, and we have not seen him look like that in an NBA uniform, even in Summer League. He looked outmatched the last 2 years in Summer League, and now he's coming into his own, and I like to see that. Trey Jemison, here's another one. I think in a pinch, as a backup big, I know some people want to go find a veteran big for the future and, you know, the rest of the season. But I think Trey Jemison, he showed us with what's out there on the open market as far as veteran bigs, Trey Jemison will do in a pinch. It's not like you're going to play him all the time, but if you have injuries, you have foul trouble, he can get in there and get some things done in a pinch. He can set some screens, he can rebound, he can finish at the rim, he can catch the ball relatively well now, although last year down the stretch of the season it didn't seem that way. He definitely improved some things heading into this offseason, and he showed those things in Summer League. So I don't think they really need, I don't think it's a necessity. I'm not going to be, you know, over angry if they go and find a veteran big on the market, on the open market, but I think Trey Jemison is about as good as anybody you can get right now in the big department out there in free agency. And then the final thing, Rooks played well. The Rooks played well. Zach Edey, only in 42 minutes. I know we have to put the preface it by saying when he was healthy, he played well. First game, 14 points, 15 rebounds, 4 blocks. Second game, he was 3 for 3 from the field with 6 points and 2 rebounds in 7 minutes.
And
that was pretty, and a block. It's pretty good. Cam Spencer, before he had the ankle issues, phenomenal. Looks like a guy who could really affect winning at the NBA level, depending on the type of role he is thrust into. And then Jalen Wells. He had some struggles at the beginning of Summer League, but he came into his own. I think he had a 20-plus point performance. He had his moments. I thought the early player development returns from this rookie class that they put together were great. So I don't really have negatives to throw out there, besides maybe Zach Edey's health, about this Summer League team. But even with Zach Edey's health, I think he's going to be completely fine. He walked off the floor under his own power. It was a rolled ankle. He'll be fine by the time they get to training camp. So I just think overwhelming positive coming out of Summer League.
I absolutely agree, and that's why it's a disappointment that they didn't win the Summer League championship, just because it would have been fun. It would have been fun, but at the end of the day, It was a highly successful summer league for the Memphis Grizzlies. One of the most successful, in my opinion, in the franchise's history. Because like you said, all of the rookies played well. I was so impressed by Jalen Wells in the last few games of summer league. Because not only did he show that he has the scoring ability, but his defensive presence was much better than I was expecting. He, you know, he kind of was a bit of a lockdown guy. If he committed to saying, hey, this guy is not getting the basketball, he wouldn't get the basketball. He was plus five last night in the game despite the loss, and that's because when he was out there, he was really making his presence known on the defensive end. So that makes me really excited about what he could potentially turn into moving forward. I also think that early on in summer league, we were having discussions about Cam Spencer on the roster versus Jalen Wells on the roster, and I do think that Jalen Wells showed in the last few games why he is on the main roster right now. He does have the ability, I think, to come in and hit some shots if you need him to. He can play pretty good defense. He shows signs of maybe being a plus defender in the future. I'm really excited to see what he can turn into for the Memphis Grizzlies. So with me, I think that the summer league confirmed that the Grizzlies had a good draft. They had a good draft. We will, you know, I think that we have some time to see if it's going to be great. To be quite honest, it's all going to depend on whether or not Zach Edey helps impact winning immediately. I think that we believe he can, but we still have to wait to see it.
And
when it comes, though, to G.G. Jackson and Jake LaRavia and Scottie Pippen Jr.,
right,
10 out of 10 for me in
yes,
the summer league.
100%.
Like, Jake LaRavia, I understand why some people still have some hesitation about him. But if we're going to be honest, we need to add some context to why his play the last few months, and I'm going back to the end of the regular season to summer league now, it's probably the longest stretch of health that he's had in his NBA career where he's been able to play consistently. And for me, it's not necessarily about, yes, his shots were going in. That certainly helps Jake LaRavia's stats. It makes him look like a better player. He just looked different on the floor. He felt more comfortable. He felt confident. He was moving quickly. He wasn't being hunted on the defensive end. And if anything, he had some moments where he was a stopper on that end. He was getting people involved. He showed some playmaking ability. And like you said, we're not saying that Jake LaRavia should be a part of the main rotation. I'm not saying that by any means. But if he is your 12th or 13th guy, kind of playing that John Conchar, he comes in just for a couple minutes a game or every few games, I would be totally fine with it. Jake LaRavia at least appears to be, you know, he's showing potential to be an NBA player moving forward. But when it comes to G.G. Jackson, that is a star in the making. The Grizzlies yep. truly found a first-round talent, if not a top-three talent, if not a number-one pick talent, at 45 in the NBA draft last year. Absolutely tremendous job by this front office finding him and giving him a runway to be successful and letting him do his thing in the summer league. And that's why after his first game, when he struggled, admittedly, we were like, everybody just pump the brakes. G.G. Jackson is one of the most talented guys on this Grizzlies roster. Just go back to see what Desmond Bane said about it. Again, I've said it a couple times. He said that G.G. Jackson is the second most talented player he has ever played with next to John Morant. And you're seeing why he said those things. I was so impressed by his body control.
Yep.
And his ability to kind of ad-lib off the dribble.
Yes.
And like you said, you brought up that Trey Jemison play. He's just finding guys. He's able to the game, in my opinion, slowed down
yes.
for him a bit as summer league went on. And you could see he was really trying to make a point to get his teammates involved more. And to be quite honest, once he started getting his teammates involved more, I think that he realized that it opens up his offensive game.
Yep.
It allows space for him to move around because when there is a threat of him making a pass, they can't double him. They can't crash the paint. I was really impressed by G.G. Jackson and his ability to evolve his game as summer league went on. We know that he has the shot-making ability from the three-point line, which is highly encouraging. But in the summer league, to your point, he showed he can score at all three levels. Most notably, he brought a floater. All of a sudden,
yep.
he's got a floater a part of his game now, and that's really exciting because he's the type of guy that could be an offensive weapon for you. And I really do think that that's how they're going to deploy G.G. next season, and that's why I'm so excited about it, because he's not going to have to really focus on the playmaking as much. It's nice that he showed the ability that he has it, but they're going to basically say, G.G., go in the game and try to put the ball
yes.
in the bucket as much as you can, and I think he has the ability to do that. And then when it comes to Scottie Pippen Jr., in my opinion, he's the backup point guard of the future.
Yep.
You said Marcus Smart, Tyus Jones. I would almost say more Mike Conley, Tyus Jones.
Okay.
Like, he's a bit of
that's
a meld,
fair.
Because smaller guards, but defensive-minded, but can also run your offense without turning the ball over. That is what Scottie Pippen Jr. is, and that's why it is so great that the Grizzlies, in my opinion, have him on a two-way right now. He's cost-controlled. You can use him when you need to, and then when the time comes, you convert him. All of us agree that Scottie Pippen Jr. is an NBA player and should be in the future. But having him on a two-way contract right now is very advantageous for the Memphis Grizzlies moving forward. It gives them some flexibility without them having to fully commit to him right now. There's still a roster crunch that they're probably trying to figure out to make a spot for him, but I would have to believe that there's a spot for Scottie Pippen Jr. moving forward, because he, to be quite honest, should have been the Summer League MVP. He was one of the best players, if not the best player, in Summer League, and it wasn't just because of his offensive production. What he did defensively was so highly impressive, and him being able to show that ability was very exciting, because it's been, you know, the backup point guards for the Grizzlies in the past haven't necessarily been defensive-minded type of guys. So having that different pitch to throw, I think, is going to be great, because he fits the culture. And I'm just excited to see what this group of guys can do next season for the Grizzlies. I have confidence in the young players in a way that I didn't necessarily have last year. I understand that the Grizzlies have this quote-unquote young core, but you know, that's when people are talking about Bane, Ja, and Jaren. But when you extend that out, you know, I think that the front office has done a really good job in the last year or so of making that core solid. I mean, Parker Fleming sent me a text last night.
This is impressive, and we talked about this off there. I think you need to put this in context.
It's a great point that he made. He texted me during the game, and he said, "It's crazy that Kleiman turned Roddy, Zaire, and Kennedy Chandler into Vince, Gigi, and Pippen in a year."
Yes. Yes, and you lucked into some of those, but at the same time, you had to go out front, especially with Gigi Jackson and with Vince Williams
Jr. You made the picks.
Spend those 45th and a 47th overall pick and then get them involved last year and then ultimately convert those contracts. Like, that's a good flip there.
Yeah, like, yes, last season forced their hand a bit with the Gigi Jackson and Vince Williams Jr.'s contract
conversions. But again, that's why
they still did it.
That's why we always discussed last year as maybe, you know, going forward, a blessing in disguise, because of that flip that they made on those three
guys. You also found Scotty.
Yeah.
Scotty was a product of last season.
Yep. 100%. Now, on Gigi Jackson, I do want to put this in context still. He's 19 years old. He was still
crazy.
He still was one of the youngest players in Summer League, even with the full rookie class out there. I think people put that into context as well. And I think going forward, I've seen a lot of this out there. I think the plan at some point, and I don't think it's next year, so everybody calm down on that. I've seen a lot of that. Gigi Jackson can be a starting small forward on this team. He absolutely can. I think him at the three, thinking about a lineup of Ja, Dez, Gigi, Jaren, Edie. That's a lot of scoring.
Very exciting.
Fair amount of defense. You feel confident about yourself. And the rim protection, of course, with Zach, Edie, and Jaren on the back end is great. Now, next on the to-do list for the Grizzlies, you head to the back half of offseason before you get to training camp, and now we have to see what's happening with Luke Kennard. Now, I know he was on Instagram yesterday.
He was.
Watching the game as a Grizzlies fan, and it seems like he's going to head this direction at some point. I still wonder what's happening behind the scenes. There is some speculation. Are they trying to see what they can do with a John Conchar contract? His extension just kicked in, and I think it's 3 years, $18 million, something like that, so $6 million per over the next 3 years. He'd become an unrestricted free agent in 2027. I don't know if that's the best contract for a lot of teams around the NBA. I don't know if they want to take that on. But even if they don't make a move with John Conchar, I think there's plenty of opportunity to still sign back Luke Kennard. But I think that's next on the to-do list for them.
For sure.
To finalize this roster, get that 15-man roster all the way settled before they get into training camp.
Yeah, that makes all the sense in the world. Real quick, though, before I move on to that, I just wanted to point out what you said about Gigi Jackson. Our good friend Chip Williams on Twitter, he put out a great tweet a few weeks ago. He said, worth remembering that Gigi Jackson would have been the ninth youngest player in the 2024 first round. He's younger than these one-and-done guys. Stephon Castle, Cody Williams, Isaiah Collier, Matas Bacelles, Johnny Furphy, I think that's supposed to be Murphy.
Murphy.
Reed Shepard, A.J. Johnson, Tyler Smith, Jacoby Walter, Bronny, Eve Meese, Jared McCain, Keyshawn George, and Justin Edwards.
Good hands. Good hands that the Grizzlies are in.
Pretty good. But yeah, I think that the plan is for the Grizzlies right now. The priority is sign Luke Kennard, because I think that we can all agree that having a high-level three-point shooter like him on the roster only makes you better. That is a competitive advantage for the Memphis Grizzlies to have a guy like Luke Kennard. We've seen the numbers when he plays with Ja, and we've definitely seen the numbers when he plays with Desmond Bane. Sean Coleman, also friend of the program, put out a great tweet today about the numbers that he has with Desmond Bane. It's basically like they were using them about 10 minutes a game together, and I think that the net rating was plus 10.5, and the offensive rating was off the charts, because when you can spread the offense like that by having two elite guards on the floor that can hit open threes, it really is going to open up things for Ja Morant. We've already talked about, if you have a lineup that includes Ja Morant, Zach Edey, Desmond Bain and Luke Kennard, just think about how many kick-out threes these guys are going to get off the pick and roll, because those defenders are going to have to make a decision. Do they get in front of John Morant? Do they get out of the way? Do they overhelp to the three-point shooter? It puts them in a bind, and it's going to really help the half-court offense of the Memphis Grizzlies, and I think all of us can agree that is pretty much the number one thing that they have to improve at. Their fast-break offense is very good. Their defense was top 10, even though they only had 27
Rebounding's
wins.
Rebounding's back now.
Rebounding is, in theory, back, and, you know, to be honest, G.G. Jackson will help that as well.
He I feel pretty confident about
BC
Zach Edey
coming
and
back
his rebounding.
And Zach Edey, yeah, it's and I think even Marcus Smart is a better rebounder.
You say
rebounder.
In theory, I don't even know for me if
I just,
if,
you know, I just,
don't even
just
know if it's in
case,
theory.
Just in case. Just in case. But yes, that should improve. So really the main concern, I think, with the Grizzlies is that half-court offense. And I just think that Luke Kennard opens up that half-court offense, even though he won't be a starter for you, but he'll be a key piece for you off the bench. And he's going to knock down threes when you need him to.
Now, it's interesting to see this is extending out some time. Like, we don't know.
The Luke thing, yeah.
Yeah, we don't know exactly what that contract's going to look like. But I'm curious, like, Sam Hauser for the Celtics got 4 years, $45 million. Right? That's a pretty high valuation for a guy like that. And I think, you know, when you look at Sam Hauser, the role he plays with the Celtics, very similar to what we're going to have to see Luke Kennard do in a Grizzlies uniform off the bench, be a flamethrower from the three-point line, shoot 44%, 45% from three. I wonder if that switches the mindset with Luke Kennard's agent and how they're going to go through these discussions going forward. Because there's a different market that's been set now that Sam Hauser has gotten that type of money. But I still think that when you look at Luke Kennard, 2 for 20, 3 for 27, I've seen something as low as 3 for 23 thrown out there. I think that he still will land somewhere around there, because it seems like he's still willing to, you know, come back on a team-friendly deal. Whereas I don't know if Sam Hauser, that's the most team-friendly deal in the world. But they've already paid everybody, so I don't think they really care about the money that they continue to spend with the Boston Celtics. But I wonder if that affects the market for Luke Kennard.
It may. I think my hope is, and it's probably the pitch that the Grizzlies are going to throw in negotiations, is Sam Hauser doesn't have a history of injury like Luke Kennard does. So that probably, hopefully that drives down the price a little bit.
Okay.
I also think that he's getting the, we just won a championship, we're paying you now bump
yes.
that we see guys get
That's
a lot.
That's true.
Because it does seem like the Boston Celtics have just opened up the checkbooks and said, to hell with the aprons and
we're
all
the
taxes.
We're already over the second apron.
We might
Who
as well.
Cares?
Who cares?
Yeah.
So that hopefully Luke Kennard understands he's not Sam Hauser, and he's not going to get that type of money, because to be honest, I don't think he deserves that type of money. You know what I mean? Sam Hauser he's an NBA champion now. He was a key piece on that roster, and he doesn't have a history of injury. Like, that's what we have to be honest about, Luke Kennard. He's a great player when he is healthy, but he has been oft injured, and that is why I think some people have a bit of hesitation. But I also think that's why the Grizzlies said, listen, man, we can't give you $14.8 million, but what we can do is we can give you maybe a few more years for lesser money. We can give you more security, but not as much money.
Yeah. Now,
that's what I'm hoping.
Over under a week and a half that this deal gets done.
Man, I hope it's under a week and a half.
I think it's under.
I hope.
I think it's under. I'm definitely hoping, but I think.
It's a bit odd.
We're getting to that point where.
It hasn't happened.
Nothing else is happening with the Grizzlies front office right this year. You're not worried about summer league. You're not really worried about players getting into practice all the time. You're waiting until training camp. They're going to be practicing away from the facility. You have all the time in the world to deal with this roster. So I think a week and a half should be enough time. So next week, or next week by the weekend, I think that this thing should be hammered out. By Saturday of next week, I think that we should have Luke Kennard back in a Grizzlies uniform and all squared away.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep. And when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex Grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex Grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame,
two more.
You deserve this ice cold reward. Modelo, the Markable Fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
But then the next step will be training camp. But all said and done, that was a very positive experience. For Summer League, I think the early returns on the player development roles that they have created in that coaching staff have definitely paid off. Joe Boylan coming over from the Timberwolves, and he was with the Pelicans as a player development guy. Anthony Carter, we know that G.G. Jackson sings his praises as a player development guy, and that's why G.G. Jackson is off to the great start for his career that he is. Noah LaRoche they brought in last year. I think that you're starting to see the fruits of that pay off right now. And it was quick. It was very, very quick. So they're going to have the rest of the offseason to get some of these young guys squared away, get ready for the NBA rotation. I'm excited to see what comes the rest of this offseason. Now, we're going to be heading into the season here relatively soon in college football, and we have AAC Media Days. Yesterday, everybody showed up. Today, everybody spoke to the media, and we had the AAC preseason media poll. And who's at the top? It would be your Memphis Tigers at number one with 23 of 30 first place votes. They are picked to be the first place finisher in the American. Now, after that, it's UTSA, then Tulane, and then at number four, it's South Florida. I'll tell you why I think after Memphis, this whole thing's a little bit out of order. That's next, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Now, AAC Media Days rolling along. We've already had Memphis speak, Ryan Silverfield, Chandler Martin, Seth Hennigan, all there. Tim Pernetti, the AAC, new AAC commissioner, who has taken over, spoke as well. A couple of highlights worth mentioning before I get to the AAC Media Days poll, where Memphis is at top, got 23 of 30 first place votes. Tim Pernetti was first today. He said there's no group of five. He's doing his best his best group or power six impression, I guess. I mean, this is at least an effort at it. He said, there's no group of five. There are nine conferences in this country playing college football. That's the way we see it. Okay, that's the way you need to see it. You need to try to get some upward trajectory. It's just going to be hard with the way that Mike Oresko left this conference. You don't have that much football power. Tulane and UTSA and Memphis are at the top of this whole thing, and they have to continue to be at the top of the whole thing if you want this conference to still take the leaps that it took under Mike Oresko as a football conference. We do have Ryan Silverfield stepping up. He talked about the offensive line, which will have a few new starters, which will, you know, be a little bit more deep than it has been in the past, but he spoke to that. Said, I feel very comfortable with a lot of the guys we have returning. This is the most depth we've had ever at offensive line, ever. Ever, he said. And they've obviously hit the transfer portal very hard. Jalen Nichols from South Carolina, who's going to be the starting left tackle there until he had a knee injury. You have Trent Holler, who was a three-year starter at Marshall, coming over, who's a backup at this particular moment. Jonah Gamble, Xavier Hill, guys that have been here for years and years and years, still there. Malachi Breland, a guy who played in the AutoZone Liberty Bowl. You should be very excited about what he has. I've been hearing from around the country he's going to be a guy that's hard to keep here on campus at the University of Memphis, but I do have hope that they can keep him here, considering what they did this offseason, the continuity they've been able to sustain under Ryan's tutelage, especially with that FedEx NIL deal. And then Chandler Martin, he did speak on the shoulder surgery he had. If you have been following him, if you followed him last year and even through spring ball, he'd always worn that brace on his shoulder because he had a pretty substantial shoulder injury at the end of his time at the FCS level. But he said the shoulder surgery will allow him to play free, allow him to play fast. He said, that's the big thing for me. As long as I play free and fast, we should be good. And we know that that linebacking core should be very, very solid, and they stopped the run at a high level in that AutoZone Liberty Bowl. So a couple of highlights there. And the biggest highlight of the day for Memphis, 23 of 30 first-place votes in the AAC preseason media poll. So they are picked very, very highly in this conference. Now, outside of Memphis, I think that you have to sort of look pretty closely at how this thing is going to play out. The way they put it, the top five they had, UTSA was at number two with four first-place votes. Tulane at three with two first-place votes. South Florida at four, no first-place votes. And then Army got a first-place vote, and they are at number five. We'll see how that plays out. I think it's going to be interesting for Army now stepping in to a conference from the independent ranks. They have a conference that's used to the triple option, that's used to the way they run offense because they've played Navy year in, year out. I think it'll be a little bit harder for them. But top four finishers, Memphis, UTSA, Tulane, South Florida. I'm going to tell you, I think that is completely out of order. And the reason I say that, it's not because I don't believe UTSA and Tulane are good football teams. I think they're good football teams. And Memphis is going to have to go on the road against those next three teams this season. It's going to be a challenge for them. Tulane's the last game of the year. They're going to get South Florida first half of the season. And then UTSA, I think, is somewhere around game seven or game eight. But the reason that I think this is out of order is South Florida should get first place votes. South Florida should probably be number two in this conference when we talk about an AAC media poll. I understand that they are still trying to rebuild, but year one of their rebuild with Alex Golish, they won a bowl game. First time they've done that since the late 2010s. It was impressive to see the turnaround they had. And what did they do? They had a 17-year-old quarterback in Byron Brown, who came into Memphis, by the way, in that 59-50 just grudge match that they had at Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium last year. Five touchdowns, one interception, 330 yards through the air, and 100 yards rushing. They have Naquan Wright, who was a transfer from Miami last year at the running back position. I really like what they have. If their defense can catch up, they can be an 8-plus win team. And I feel very confident about that. And the reason I would put them over UTSA and Tulane is I think that there are some real questions about what they're going to have to do going forward. Both of those teams have quarterback positions open. Connor, let me just go ahead and throw this to you. What's the most important position on a football field?
I would say quarterback.
Yeah, and now you have UTSA. It's either going to be Eddie Lee Marburger at quarterback or a guy by the name of Owen McCown, who could not break the starting rotation, could not get in to start at Colorado when they were 1-11 and losing games just every single week. So that's the guy that they probably have favored to win that position battle, and I don't necessarily believe that that is going to be good enough to replace Frank Harris Jr., a guy that they kept on campus using NIL money, probably their best quarterback in the history of their program since coming into the FBS. That's going to be a challenge, and you cannot deny that challenge ahead of time. I know they're picked second. I know that the AAC media is high on them. But after a 9-4 season, they lost Will Stein, their OC, 2 years ago to Oregon. I think they have a step back on the offensive side coming up, and it's coming up very, very fast. They lost their running back, Sincere McCormick, 2 years ago. They lost their quarterback, Frank Harris Jr., this year. It's going to be a challenge for them to get back to 9 wins this season. So I don't agree with them at number 2. Tulane is going to be an interesting thing because I think they have more upward trajectory. I'd rank them over UTSA, quite frankly, in this AAC media poll. But they don't have a quarterback right now. They're going to have Kai Horton, who actually filled in pretty nicely for Michael Pratt over the years. But they also brought in a transfer who never could crack the rotation at Oregon, Ty Thompson. Ty Thompson, not the best thrower of the football, but he can use his legs. You can get some read option concepts out of him. But also think about this with Tulane. I think you know, it's twofold. Yeah, you don't have a quarterback, but now you have a new head coach coming in. Willie Fritz is off to Houston. The Willie Fritz era is done. Now it's on John Sumrall coming over from Troy out of the Sun Belt to a tougher conference, and he's got to make sure that he keeps Tulane on the tracks, which we have seen in the past is not the easiest thing to do. Even Willie Fritz, who got to the heights that we saw the last 2 years at Tulane, you know how long it took him to get to that point? He was there for going on. He almost was there for a decade trying to get Tulane up off the ground. He got it done, but we have seen over the years Tulane is a hard place to sustain success on the football side of things. So I think that that is way too high of a ranking for them. South Florida is the team that I think poses the biggest threat outside of Memphis to go win the AAC. And some people will say I'm overrating them, but they are a sleeping giant. That's my opinion, especially in this conference. They have a new football stadium that they're funding. They have a good coach in Alex Golish, who learned under Josh Heupel at Tennessee and, you know, had Hendon Hooker playing at the highest of possible levels. And you just look at last year with this young quarterback, true freshman, Byron Brown, at 17 years of age, leading the team in rushing, throwing for 3,500 yards. You cannot overlook that South Florida team. And I think they are being overlooked way too heavily. I have told you in the past, when we got the schedule, I think that game on October 11th on the road in Tampa against South Florida is the biggest threat to the Tigers in conference. So those are my thoughts. I want to know your opinion there, Connor.
I was just going to ask you, do you think that the UTSA love that they've been getting in the preseason, could it be boiled down to simply they have a pretty easy schedule?
They have an easy schedule, sure, but I think at the end of the day, I think most of the love comes from the top and their coach. Jeff Traylor's a good coach. He really is. And I think that they get a lot of love because of that. He's, I think, one of the highest paid, if not the highest paid coach in the American Athletic Conference. He has earned that. I think he might be, you know, on paper, the best coach in the American Athletic Conference. I think that's where that love comes from. I understand their schedule is relatively easy, but Jeff Traylor is the guy. He's the straw that stirs the drink for that entire program.
What is the bar of success for Memphis this year? Like, what do they have to hit for us to say successful season?
I think 10 wins getting into the conference championship is sort of the bar, right?
Agreed.
That should be what they look at. I'm not saying they don't have any room for error in getting into the conference championship. You lose one game in conference, you're probably going to get there. It's okay. Now, if we're talking about college football playoff, I don't think that should be the absolute bar. I think that should be the extra. That should be the icing.
The cherry on top.
But I know some people really want to see that happen because it's the best opportunity they have ever had to go make that happen. With that, you're not going to have the same, you know, the margin for error is very little. You're going to have to go 11-1, win the conference championship. That's the only way you get into the college football playoff. And then you're going to have to hope. You look around the country. I know that some people look at Boise State and Liberty and all these schools. I just wonder how that all plays out. The Mountain West may have a little bit more they may be viewed a little bit more positively by the college football playoff committee because now you have a scheduling alliance with Oregon State and Washington State, a little more power. They've been a decent conference over the years. UNLV is still there. They've done a good job. Fresno State. No, they just lost Jeff Tedford, but they've done a good job over the years. I think that this is a shift, and it's going to be an interesting trial run to see how the committee goes about deciding who is going to be the Group of Five representative. Are they going to just, you know, go what they've gone with over the years and immediately point to the AAC, you have a one-loss team, come on down? Or are they going to look a little harder at the Mountain West and compare them to the AAC and the scheduling and the wins and lean to the Mountain West? I think that's going to be an interesting thing to watch. I think Liberty is going to be one of those teams with Caden Salter still at quarterback that they're going to look at hard. I think they got in last year to the New Year's Six Bowl game because they were undefeated, but they didn't play anybody. And we saw them absolutely get exposed by Oregon in the bowl game. But I think even if, you know, a team from the Mountain West or a team from the AAC has one loss and Liberty still runs the table, goes undefeated like it was last year, I still think that the committee would lean AAC or Mountain West over a team like Liberty. But these are going to be things we have to watch as the season goes along.
Absolutely. I would have to think if Memphis's only loss is to Florida State and they win the conference championship that they would be in.
Yeah, and all, you know, and I think we may view it a little differently if you get blown out by Florida State.
Sure, that's true. That's very true.
But let's also think back to last year, similar team, going on the road for the most part, basically last second, against Mizzou. They lost by 7 to Mizzou. Mizzou went on to beat Ohio State in the New Year's Six Bowl game. I mean, I think that game, yeah, the line may look pretty lopsided It's going to be at Florida State, so it's going to be really hard to play in that environment for Memphis. But I think they can keep that game respectable. If they keep that game respectable and that's their one loss, I think without question they would be the Group of Five represented in the college football playoff. If they get blown out, we could be having a different discussion. And it also, it depends on what Boise State, Liberty, all these other schools do.
Why do you think Army got a first-place vote?
I don't know.
That makes no sense to me.
For America? I don't know.
For America. There's no
USA.
Chance. There's no way.
No, I don't think so either. But Army has been a pretty good program in the past few years. I do hold this true. I think it's going to be harder and harder. This is obvious first. It's going to be harder and harder for Navy and Army to continuously put out good football. It's just going to be hard. The NIL funds, they don't have them. People, if they're good enough as, you know, players in their prep schools, they can transfer out and go to a different school. So they're not going to get transfers in necessarily, but they will have transfers out. They don't have the NIL. That's going to be really hard for them to sustain it. And I think Army, what they have been able to do is nice over the years, but now that you're in a conference, and Navy had this has happened to Navy over the years. You're in a conference where you have this style that everyone has to practice for every single year. In training camp, they're getting ready for it because it's such a wrinkle. All these teams in the American Athletic Conference have seen Navy year over year over year run something similar. Army's going to have to deal with maybe offensively having a pretty substantial slowdown because the teams they're playing are used to the looks that they're throwing out there. I think that's something that's been under-discussed. I think Army's a more talented team than Navy, but at the same time, joining a conference is going to be a challenge for them more than people are recognizing at this particular moment. And by the way, to answer your question, your original question, them getting a first-place vote is just foolish. Makes no sense. Makes no sense at all.
Something would have horrific happen if Army ends up winning the conference.
I just don't see it being a reality. Now, we do have ACC, Big Ten, AAC, Conference USA, Media Days all rolling along right now. And I wanted to visit something yesterday. ACC Media Days were opened up. And we know Florida State and Clemson have been the topic of discussion because of the ongoing litigation with the 2036 grant of rights that the ACC has. But Jim Phillips, their commissioner, he stepped up to the podium and he delivered a message. And it was very pointed at those two members in particular. Go ahead and play it, Connor.
There are limits to what I can say, but I can state that we will fight to protect the ACC and our members for as long as it takes. We are confident in this league and that it will remain a premier conference in college athletics for the long-term future. These disputes continue to be extremely damaging, disruptive, and incredibly harmful to the league, as well as overshadowing our student athletes and the incredible successes taking place on the field and within the conference.
Okay. He got his ass kicked by that teleprompter.
Has he never seen a teleprompter in his life before?
He got his ass kicked by that teleprompter.
He kept trying to, like, make eye contact with everybody. Brother, just stay on the prompter.
If you put to the side the fact that he completely jumbled those words and got his ass kicked by the teleprompter, the message is very pointed.
Message was pointed.
And it's very well received. He's going to fight the hell out of Florida State and Clemson and keep them in that conference as long and make their life hell for as long as he possibly can. And they are fighting words. And to me, I don't blame him in the slightest. He has no choice but to fight. You have your two premier programs trying to get the hell out. You have your two premier programs actively telling the media that they are bucking against you. You have to uphold the sanctity of your conference. You added Stanford and Cal and SMU. You have tried to somewhat strengthen your product on the field. But this fight that he is about to take on in the next few years is going to be the toughest fight that he takes on as the ACC commissioner. He has to find a way to keep those particular powers in that conference, or he is going to risk having the ACC fall into no man's land in the ever-changing sort of landscape of where we're at in college football. I understand the message. Yes, he got his ass kicked by the teleprompter, but I think those fighting words need to be fighting words, and I think it makes a whole lot of sense that that was his opening statement at ACC Media Days. I do give the salute to Jim Phillips. Somebody else wrote it for him, but I do give the salute to Jim Phillips for, you know, bucking against, fighting openly in the media against Florida State and Clemson, because they have done the same thing on the other side.
Been a tough few weeks for Florida State at Media Days.
Yeah. I still wonder how this whole thing's going to work out. That grant of rights, we've heard the word ironclad for years and years and years. We'll see here in the next couple of years how ironclad it is. Through 2036, I wonder if the arguments that Florida State and Clemson put out over the next couple of years are going to be strong enough to sway them to be able to release themselves from that. But Jim Phillips is trying to do what he can to buck against that trend right now, and I think it's honorable for the most part. Now let's go ahead and grab a break on that note, and we'll go ahead and get into hour number two. And opening hour number two, that's Jeff Calkins. We'll talk about Summer League, talk about AAC Media Days, we'll talk about Memphis football. There's plenty to get to right here on the other side, 92.9 FM ESPN.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.